And now,
great to be back.
Back to the Bill Frank Radio Show.
Awesome.
And your host, Bill Frank.
Welcome back. I'm Bill Frank, and you're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show on KVTA News Talk 1520. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is business and politics. Each of my guests will share his or her perspective on one of those topics. My next guest is an authority on leadership, growth, and innovation. He'll explain how extraordinary companies pursue radical, continuous change from his latest book, The Reinventors. Jason Jennings is a researcher and one of the most successful and prolific business and leadership authors in the world, and his greatest thrill is helping lead individuals and companies to their full economic potential. He began his career as a radio and television reporter and was the youngest radio station group owner in the nation. Later, he founded Jennings McLaughlin & Company, consulting firm that became the world's largest media consultancy, and his legendary programming and sales strategies were credited with revolutionizing many parts of the broadcasting industry. He traveled the globe in search of the world's fastest-growing companies for his landmark book, It's Not the Big That Eat the Small, It's the Fast That Eat the Slow, and I have that on my bookshelves. Within weeks of its release, the Wall Street Journal, USA Today, and the New York Times, it hit the bestseller list. USA Today named it one of the top 25 business books of the year. His latest book is titled The Reinventors, How Extraordinary Companies Pursue Radical Continuous Change, and it reveals the secrets of those leaders and organizations that have successfully reinvented and transformed themselves. In total, Jason and his team have screened and studied more than 120,000 companies to write this book. Joining us from Northern California. Hi, Jason. How are you today?
Hi, Bill. It's great to be with you.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest, especially a recognized authority such as yourself. And I just want to start, if I can, please, by noting that two-thirds of the companies that were on the Fortune 500 list in the year 2000 had dropped off that list by the year 2010. Two-thirds of them. I mean,
it happens with lightning speed.
Well, it did in this case.
Just because you're in business today, you are not entitled to be in business tomorrow, as the numbers certainly prove.
Well, that's true. And entitlement, that's something else that the country is suffering from. But right now, I want to question you a little bit on that, because during that decade, we actually saw two giant bubbles burst. First was the tech bubble, and then the real estate bubble. So how much did the overall economic environment account for this change of these top Fortune 500 companies, and how much of it was leadership and companies just not getting out of their own way?
You know, I don't believe that the failure of so many companies had anything at all to do with the economic circumstances of either the Great Recession or of the tech bubble that burst. In fact, looking back at recorded business history, you'll see that many of the greatest companies in the nation were started during the Great Depression or during other recessions. I think what happens, and we talk about it in the book, is I do use that word entitlement. Companies find themselves in a position, dollars are coming in the door, it's business as usual, and they practice this credo which says, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And then all of a sudden, something happens, and well, they should have seen. I mean, they should have been able to understand. I mean, that history repeats itself, especially in economic cycles. But again, they just put themselves to sleep. They think that because they're there, they're always going to be there. They get caught by surprise. And then, of course, the other thing we've had, Bill, is the incredible sense of disintermediation that has taken place over the past decade. The consumer today, whether they know it or not, is a smart, a very savvy consumer, and they know all the choices they have. They're no longer locked into doing business with anybody. And so I think you had a lot of companies that have become kind of lazy. I think you had a customer or a consumer that was being changed because of the digitization of everything and the transparency of everything, and you put those together, and it was, many of these companies were roadkill.
My guest is Jason Jennings, author of the book, The Reinventors, How Extraordinary Companies Pursue Radical Continuous Change. And Jason, the theme today is business and politics, so I want to bring this back around, because what's true for business is also true for government. So if you take a look, would you conclude that both state and federal governments have fallen into the same traps that some of these businesses that fell off the Fortune 500 list fell into?
Well, without question. I mean, again, we have that strong sense of entitlement, Bill. I mean, your government's been there. Your government's always going to be there. Your government always has to expand, and we're there to take care of you. And over the past several weeks since the book first debuted in the middle of May. Many people have made the observations that all of the lessons in the book, The Reinventors, are certainly applicable to business as well, or to government as well.
All right, great. Well, now, you assert that there are top six reinvention killers, and I'm just going to go through them because I want to talk about them in detail. Not making growth a guiding principle, not letting go, not having a clear destination, not making lots of small bets, not practicing Jugad, and not being fast enough, which, of course, was the title of one of your other books. Mm-hmm. So let's take a look at these and go down the list, if you can, one by one. Not making growth a principle, a guiding principle. What do you mean by that?
Okay. Well, lots of companies and organizations proclaim they have a set of guiding principles, but frankly, they're not worth the paper they're printed on or the digital space they occupy, because nobody in any company has really ever been able to tell me their guiding principles. So therefore, they have a nice list, but it's not used. When something becomes a guiding principle, it becomes a tenet for every decision made within the organization. I was sitting down with the man I identify as the quintessential reinventor in the book, Mike Long of Aero Electronics, who turned his little sleepy company into a $22 billion giant. And he is continually buying companies and inventing new businesses. And I looked at him one day and I said, you know, are you ever going to stop it? He said, I can't. And I said, why? And he said, my people. And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, I'm surrounded by a great workforce, Jason. And he said, unless they continue to see opportunity tomorrow, challenges tomorrow, a chance for promotions, a chance to make more money, they're going to leave. And if they leave, where do they go? They either become my competitors or they join my competitors. He said, organizations must embrace constant change so that they can have growth for the benefit of their people, who can stay ahead of the customer, and that's how the shareholder gets served. So nobody woke up this morning on the planet, Bill, and said, I want tomorrow to suck more than today. Everybody is looking forward to a better tomorrow, and unless an organization is growing, there's no better tomorrow for anybody.
All right, my guest is Jason Jennings. Jason, one of the things that I took away from your book in this area is successful serial and reinventors are committed to double-digit improvement in the financial performance every year. Wow, in this economy, I mean, can one actually hold up that expectation and expect to achieve it?
Yes, they can. And a fine point, when we talk about a double-digit improvement, we're not talking about double-digit growth. So many of these companies will achieve 5% growth on the top line, perhaps 5% and improvement on the bottom line because of increased efficiency within the organization. And some years they may have no growth, but they'll buy something that gives them that growth. But overall, that tipping point seems to be organizations that are improving their overall financial condition by double digits every year, find, keep, and grow people. That's what allows them to stay ahead of customers and serve the shareholder. There has to be growth. There is no business in recorded history, Bill. There has never been a business that remains static for very long. You are either going ahead or you are going backwards. And when you're going backwards, everybody will desert the ship.
Profound words. My guest is Jason Jennings. So, Jason, moving on to point number two is not letting go. And let me just throw a couple of company names out at you. RIM in the telephone area, Yahoo and JCPenney. And Yahoo and JCPenney are both very interesting because Yahoo just signed up a deal, Yahoo Finance, with CNBC this week. So that might bolster their fortunes. And, of course, JCPenney's, this is the week, the first anniversary of Ron Johnson becoming the CEO over there and trying to turn that company around. So talk to me, if you will. Let's start with Ron Johnson with his reinvention of JCPenney. Is that going to work or not going to work in your estimation?
I don't think it's going to work for this reason. I have tremendous respect for him because he was the architect, of course, of the Apple retail store, and there's no more incredible retail experience on the planet. Here's the fatal mistake that Ron Johnson made. There's a line in the book, and the line says, by the time you figure out your business sucks, it has sucked for a very long time. And the problem is, if a business has sucked for a very long time, it takes a long time to fix it. If it's taken 5 years to go down the gurgler, it may take 3 to 5 years to bring it out of the drain. Here was Ron Johnson's fatal mistake. For one of my other books, the CEO of a publicly traded company for 42 years told me, he said, we've been a successfully publicly traded company for 42 years. He said, in 42 years, we have never given short-term financial guidance. Because if you're giving quarterly advice and guidance, you're basically turning over your company, his quote, to a bunch of snot-nosed 27-year-old financial analysts of Wall Street, and you're working for them, not your long-term shareholders. Johnson should have come in to Penny's. He should have said, we're going to have the most glorious transformation on the planet. It's going to take 2 to 3 years, and this thing is going to be the most incredible retail experience in the world, and we're not giving quarterly financial guidance for the next couple of years. We'll just give you general guidance. But here he is in the muck and the mire trying to fix this thing. They're still giving quarterly guidance, and I suggest that within a year, he'll be out of there.
Interesting. Well, that's a good prediction. We'll come back in a year and we'll talk to you about that. My guest is Jason Jennings. So, Jason, point number three in your book is not having a clear destination. But I want to challenge you on this one a bit, because can't a destination be too broad? And I'm going to throw three company names at you. Google, their whole destination is organizing all of the world's information. Apple, changing the world. Facebook, connecting the planet. I mean, those are huge, broad destinations like that. Don't they provide too much latitude for individual employees within the organization chasing that broad a destination?
Not in the least. It's one of the reasons why I actually prefer doing radio interviews to television interviews, because radio, voice, words, create a picture in people's minds, and they actually create the picture they want to see. And so everyone listening to you, if they were asked to describe my physical attributes, to some people I'd be 5 feet tall, to some people I'd be 7 feet tall, to some people I'd be African-American, to other people I might be, a white boy, I might have blonde hair, I might have black hair. They're seeing what they want to see. So when Google says, we're going to organize all the information in the world, and toward that end, we're going to buy, we're going to average 2 to 3 companies that we're buying every week. We're going to be in partnerships with NASA. We're going to be involved in gaming. We're going to be involved in dating. We're going to be involved in everything. I think what that says to people is, my God, I'm young, I'm digitally savvy and turned on. I need to be there. Because organizing all the information in the world can mean something different to everybody. The same with Apple. I mean, we're going to change the entire world. Who wouldn't want to be part of that? And so there has to be this big destination. It's the job of the leader to provide a destination, but I don't think it has to be, you know, pinpoint specific by any stretch of the imagination. Let it be big enough that people can let it be what they want it to be.
All right. My guest is Jason Jennings, author of the book, The Reinventors, How Extraordinary Companies Pursue Radical Continuous Change. And another point that you make in the book is that big, unsuccessful companies don't make a lot of small bets. Now, here again, I want to challenge you just a little bit, because in these cash-constrained times right now, doesn't making a lot of small bets almost by definition mean that you're not reinvesting enough in your major brands, your major products and services?
No, not at all, for the following reason, Bill. Every product or every service has an S-curve, and so there is an introduction, then it's a time when it's becoming popular, and you're deriving most of your revenues and profitability from it, but then before you know it, it's on a downhill slide. Well, if you wait until a product or service is on a downhill slide to begin trying to replace it, again, you're dead meat. The deck is stacked against you. And it's true of every product or service in the world. Every product or service ultimately becomes yesterday's breadwinner, because every product or service becomes commoditized. And so nobody knows what the next new big thing is. So, for example, Google, who's purchased 200 companies over the past 2 years, many of those small bets are not going to work out. But they're not certain which ones will and which one won't. So the challenge is figure out the ones that do and then quickly scale them, and laugh about the ones that don't and just discard them and get it on. The only reason to bet the ranch, to make a big, big bet, is when you're about to go off the edge of a cliff. And what we're seeing right now with Meg Whitman at Hewlett-Packard is going to be Carly Fiorina, too. Just last week, she said that she was using the inspiration of Howard Schultz of Starbucks, I mean, as her guide for turning around Hewlett-Packard. The difference is, as we talk about in the book, in his first 18 months back as CEO, Starbucks made 150 small bets, replaced several $1 billion in missing revenue, goes back into organic growth. He's named CEO of the Year. In the same article in which she invoked the spirit of Howard Schultz as her model, she said, but we're not going to make small bets. We're going to make a few big bets.
Elaborate on that a little bit more, Jason, using a different company, Nokia. Nokia is making a huge bet that they can get into the smartphone market with Windows Operating System 8 for the mobiles. Is that going to work? Is that a big bet that could or could not fail?
Well, again, I'm going to mix metaphors, and anybody who's an English teacher out there will want to come out and cut out my twisted tongue. But the only time to bet the ranch is when you're about to go over the edge of a cliff. And so if you're on the edge of a precipice and you're staring downwards, I guess at that point in time, you might as well risk everything. The real question is, why in the hell did you get to that position in the first place? Had you been making lots of small bets and scaling those that work, you would never find yourself in a position where you have to bet the ranch. They're betting the ranch. I am not one of those business pundits who enjoys the failure of anybody. I'm about success. I want companies to be successful. I never want to play the I told you so game. So in the case of Nokia, I don't know what's going to happen, but it's one last gasp, big, huge bet they're making. And you're now seeing the same thing with Research in Motion, RIM, the folks who own BlackBerry. When you consider that 2 years ago, that company was worth $77 billion, and today it's worth $7 billion, and they've lost $70 billion of market capitalization. Somebody ought to be in the pokey for management malpractice. And they're doing the same thing now. They're talking about this huge, big new bet they're going to be making later this fall. They should have never gotten into the place where they had to make one big bet had they been making constant small bets and scaling those that work.
Management malpractice. My guest is Jason Jennings. Jason, last point I want to talk about in your book, something that was the title of one of your other books, and that is not being fast enough. Most companies are forced to be fast or die in this environment. Isn't that really just Schumpeter's law of creative destruction? Why aren't people, at this stage of the game, why aren't people turned on to the fact that creative destruction is what happens in a capitalist society?
Because they want to be like a certain species of dodo bird and bury their head in the sand, I guess, Bill. I think it comes down to something as simple as this. I'm the guy that talks about change. I'm the guy that lectures about change. I'm the guy that writes about change. And yet I will tell you that on Sundays, in an attempt to put my world back together again, it's get up at the same time, it's read the New York Times, it's go off to church at the same time, it's to take the 10-mile hike at the same time, it's to have the same dinner every Sunday night, and as a human being, every time I can't do what I normally do, I mean, I'm really out of sort. And so we all profess the fact that we love change and we welcome change. I say that's garbage, because when change comes knocking at our door, knock, 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 I'm here, we always say, sorry, not today, I'm busy. We all wrestle with change. The winners are the ones who are able to take one step inside the ring and say, I'm here, let's punch it out, and let's change. And I'll conclude with a big thought, I think, from the book. And it's this. It's an ancient Chinese proverb. I didn't make it up. And here's what the Chinese proverb says. It says, man sit in chair with open mouth for very long time, waiting for roast duck to fly in.
Great advice from Jason Jennings. Jason, your wealth of knowledge, obviously an expert in the whole area of change management. If people are intrigued by what they hear, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, your company, where would you direct them to go on the internet?
Well, I guess the best place to go is jason-jennings.com. You'll find all my books, all my speeches there. Of course, the books are available in bookstores everywhere. Amazon.com is one of my favorites. The Kindle's there, the Nooks at Barnes & Noble. But worth pointing out this time is this, and this is very exciting because bookstores are becoming fewer and fewer, but The Reinventors is available very deep, lots of copies, in every one of the 1,000 Hudson's Airport stores across the United States. So the book is out there. I hope your listeners will buy and read it, and I hope they'll learn from it.
Jason, it's been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
I hope we have an opportunity to do this together. You're probably one of the most prepared interviewers with whom I've ever spoken.
Well, thank you. That's very kind.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.